Thank you for joining me for today's Beastwatch News Update. News from the Internet's most comprehensive Bible prophecy news website, BeastWatchNews.com. I'm Kimberly Rogers Brown. The war rhetoric between Israel and Iran escalated this week at the Munich Security Conference. Iran issued a strong warning to Israel on Monday in response to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's fiery speech at last weekend's Munich Security Conference. This annual event is likely to be remembered more for saber-rattling and ultimatums and the lack of discernible progress on resolving lingering conflicts or brewing crises around the world. Netanyahu spoke about Iran's drone invasion the week before and said Israel will not allow Iran's regime to put a noose of terror around our neck. We will act without hesitation to defend ourselves, and we will act, if necessary, not just against Iran's proxies that are attacking us, but against Iran itself. Netanyahu also accused Iran of seeking to dominate the region with aggression and terror. Iran was not happy with Netanyahu and threatened his life when they bomb Tel Aviv and raise it to the ground. Tehran said that if Israel takes any more military actions against Iran, Tel Aviv will be bombed. The United States weighed in on the tensions between Israel and Iran. This is what I have been predicting would happen. The United States will intervene between Israel and Iran. As you may have heard me say last year, I believe Ezekiel 38 should be interpreted differently than the traditional way. I believe Ezekiel 38:5 does not say Persia will be allied with Gog from verse 4, but that Persia will move into Israel because Gog is in Israel, which it is now, since last year's U.S. military base opened in the Negev Desert, and Gog has intervened in the war between Israel and Iran. Ezekiel 38:4 says, "And I will turn you back and put hooks into your jaws, and I will bring you forth, and all your army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords." Verse 5 says, "Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya with them, all of them with shield and helmet." I believe the way this should be understood is that because Gog, the U.S., is in Israel as both an ally and military power, that it will cause Persia, Iran, to enter Israel. Gog's, the U.S. military's, presence in Israel is the primary cause, according to Ezekiel, for Iran to attack Israel. The reason for this is clear. It is Gog's punishment by Yahweh from over 2,700 years ago for escaping his punishment to go into captivity with the rest of the 10 tribes, including his own tribe, Reuben. And delayed punishment is always worse. So Ezekiel 38:4-5 are a progression of events, not the same event. Gog enters Israel first, and Gog already has entered Israel as a defender, a guard, just as Ezekiel 38:7 instructed him, the U.S., to do. So for more information on this, see the Jerusalem Report for July 7, 2017. The next event will be that Persia and their allies come into Israel as weaponized and as built up in military hardware as Gog. The U.S. is already an enemy of Iran, even with the advent of Obama's nuclear deal. Tehran hates Trump worse than Obama. U.S. National Security Advisor Herbert Raymond McMaster's warning to the international community that the time has come to act against Iranian proxies in the Middle East is just the first of many direct provocations that will be made by the U.S. toward Iran. McMaster said Iran is seeding destructive weapons into their networks in Syria, Hezbollah, and the Iraqi Shiite militias, and he sounded the alarm in the international community this week, saying, "So the time is now, we think, to act against Iran." McMaster accused Iran of planning to use Hezbollah-style proxy armies in Iraq and Syria to weaken and destabilize regional Arab governments and criticized the international community's 2015 nuclear accord signed by Iran, the U.S., U.K., Russia, France, China, Germany, and the EU, saying the world should address the serious flaws in the Iran deal and counter Iran's destabilizing activities, including its development and proliferation of missiles. McMaster also singled out Germany, Russia, China, Japanese and South Korea for investments that help to fund Iran's missile program and terror activities in the Middle East, and called for them to stop doing business with Revolutionary Guard Corps affiliated interests and to pressure Iran to reject the right of its people. Not only does McMaster want Iran to step down as leader of the northern Middle East, but he wants Iran to knuckle under to the cultural values of the West, values that are so very different from Iran's. McMaster also railed against the Syrian regime of dictator Bashar Assad, accusing him of using chemical weapons against his own people and demanding that the international community hold him accountable. In Lebanon this past week, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson accused Hezbollah of threatening to destabilize the Middle East and called on it to end activities in Syria. Everything is exactly the way McMaster stated it. Iran is now entrenched in Syria and moving toward Israel's border. Israel will attempt to defend itself, but Iran will still overcome Israel, according to Daniel 11:41. Iran is building an advanced weapons factory factories in Lebanon to consolidate their power in both Syria and Lebanon, and Israel is trying to prevent that. Iran's two underground factories in Shia areas in Lebanon can produce the fairly accurate Fateh 110 missile with a range of up to 300 kilometers with a half-ton warhead. And according to foreign reports, Iran has also tried to build factories in the northern Sunni areas in Lebanon. Now, this creates a problem for the Sunni-held areas because Israel is now in an alliance with Sunni Arabs, Saudi Arabia, and its Arab League. Israel cannot bomb the Sunni areas without damaging their relationship with their new Arab allies. Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman has made it clear that while Israel does not want to start a third Lebanon war, they are determined to prevent Iraq from using Lebanon to produce precision missiles for Hezbollah that will hit deep inside the Israeli home front. An Israeli hit on any of those weapons factories could be the trigger for Iran to proceed with its attack on Israel. Remember, IDF assessments say Hezbollah has at least 100,000 short-range rockets and several thousands more missiles that can reach the center of Israel. Some analysts believe that this coming war will be regional. I believe it will lead to world war, starting with a direct confrontation between the U.S. and Russia, who will no longer be able to stick with just their proxies to fight each other. And in fact, later in this report, you're going to find out that this has probably already happened. I have reported for a long time that Russia has taken over the Arctic Circle with military bases and submarines. The attack on America is prophesied by Jeremiah 5:50 and 51. So let's take a look at Jeremiah 5. Jeremiah 5:15 says, "See, I will bring a nation upon you from far, house of Israel, says the Lord. It is a mighty nation. It is an ancient nation, a nation whose language you do not know, neither do you understand what they say. Their quiver is as an open sepulcher. They are all mighty men, and they shall eat up your harvest and your bread, which your sons and your daughters should eat. They shall eat up your flocks and your herds. They shall eat up your vines and your fig trees. They shall impoverish your fenced cities, where you trusted with the sword. Nevertheless, in those days, says the Lord, I will not make a full end with you. And it shall come to pass when you say, Why does the Lord our God do all these things to us? Then you shall answer them, Because you have forsaken me and served strange gods in your land, so shall you serve strangers in a land that is not yours. This is what Yahweh prophesied in Deuteronomy. In verse 20 says, Declare this in the house of Jacob and publish it in Judah. Jeremiah 5 starts with an indictment against the house of Judah, and this is important to note because in this chapter, Jeremiah is talking about both houses. In verse 11, he talks to the house of Israel and the house of Judah, who have dealt treacherously against him. Jeremiah's address to the two houses was given to the house of Israel before they went into Babylonian captivity, but after the house of Israel was already in Assyrian captivity. This is an important piece because it means that Jeremiah was addressing people who were no longer in covenant with Yahweh. His address to them then is a future prophecy, one that is most likely to be fulfilled in the end of days, since he has already brought the Assyrians to destroy them and they are already in captivity. We must know where the house of Israel is in the end of days if we are to expect to understand Jeremiah's prophecy. The 10 tribes went into complete Assyrian captivity in 720 BC. They had been in a drawn-out series of captivities from 785 BC, starting with the Assyrian king Tiglath-Pileser. The series of Assyrian invasions ended and was complete under King Sennacherib in 720 BC. Jeremiah was not born until 655 BC, 65 years after the house of Israel went into Assyrian captivity. But it wasn't long before the Babylonian invasion of Assyria began. During wartime, people scatter. Yahweh had told his people that if they disobeyed him, he would scatter them to the four winds and they would forget their identity altogether. The Babylonian wars quickly followed the Assyrian captivity, which resulted in mass emigration, people leaving the Middle East to move elsewhere. Jewish historians, anthropologists, archaeologists, and others have traced the Hebrews through the Caucasus Mountains and into Central and Northern Europe. Just one indicator of their migrations can be seen in the invasion of the Saxons in England in 450 AD. The term Saxon is a dialectic of Isaac's sons. Yahweh's people were still migrating northward from their Middle Eastern heritage into Europe because Yahweh had told them they would not inherit any of Abraham's land because of their disobedience. Thus, God forced them out of the Middle East in large numbers. Some remained, but that's for another broadcast. So what happened about 1100 years later? Well, there was another major migration out of Europe to the New World when America was colonized and became a nation. Today, the lost sons of Isaac, or the Saxons, rule the world. they are still in Assyrian captivity because no king ever came along to declare their captivity over the way the Babylonian king Cyrus did for the Jews. And this is why it has to be Yeshua Messiah who will declare the end of the captivity. You know, he has to set the captives free. But America has existed as a nation in Assyrian and Roman captivity since before she became a nation. The Europeans were in Assyrian captivity that was transferred to Roman captivity. America is founded on much of the governmental system of ancient Edomite Rome. But a coup happened in America in 2008 with the election of Barack Obama, who spiritually caused America to go into Babylonian captivity. You can get the details of this at themessianicmessage.com, where you will find a teaching called The Time to Flee. A modern America is the prophesied end-time counterpart to ancient Babylon that is to be destroyed in the end of days, as prophesied by Jeremiah in chapters 50 and 51. So, in Jeremiah chapter 5, we read some details about America's house of Israel destruction when Yahweh says he will bring a mighty nation from far away to destroy his people for their disobedience. This nation, he says, is an ancient nation, one whose language we don't know or understand. I ask you, how many Americans speak, read, or understand Russian? If you have been listening to this program, you've heard the evidence that Russians are the scattered ancient Persians. The Greeks and Roman wars scattered the defeated Persians into the far north, where they remain today, but with a faithfulness to modern Iran, which is the ancient remnant of the Persian people living in the Middle East. This ancient Russian-Persian people are enemies of both the Jews, the House of Judah, and the House of Israel, who now populate the westernized nations. And it is these people who are now an occupying force in the Arctic, with missiles pointed both to America and Europe. Furthermore, Russia has missiles pointed at Europe from across the eastern border as well. The modern-day Persians, Russia and Iran, may or may not consciously know the history, but that does not matter because Yahweh is stirring up their old hatred of us Hebrews. The Russians' missiles will easily reach American soil, just like Jeremiah 5:16 says, and those missiles are like an open grave. So, while some analysts believe the conflict between Israel and Iran will remain regional, I do not. I believe that conflict will escalate to become global, starting with Russia moving against the United States on U.S. soil. Iran will handle the Middle East, but Russia will handle the West. And not only Russia, but another red Edomite group of nations too. China and North Korea will be with Russia. They will take out America's island allies, the Philippines, Guam, Thailand, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand. The attacks will come suddenly and be over quickly, and will pave the way for the religious counterpart to the Edomites' secularism, Islam, to begin its conversion of everyone who remains alive after the attacks. This situation will come to a head. Israel and Iran are rushing headlong toward the King of the North and South battle, prophesied in Daniel 11, verses 40 to 45. Will the United Nations be able to stave this off for a while? I don't know. It depends on Yahweh's timing, but the fact is that this war is coming, and most military men and political analysts are now saying it is coming soon. Just the fact that Israel and Iran are both increasing their militaries along the Golan border speaks volumes. The recent tensions along the Israeli-Syrian border have been mainly aerial so far, but due to developments in the Syrian civil war, real changes are also taking place on the ground in the Golan Heights. The Assad regime, which has gained the upper hand in the war, is now focusing on aggressively attacking rebel enclaves east of Damascus and in the northern Idlib provinces. But it is also gradually bolstering its presence in southern Syria, including in the Syrian Golan Heights. And accordingly, Israel is altering its deployment to prepare for what's to come. The de-escalation agreement for southern Syria, which the United States, Russia, and Jordan signed last November, included a promise to keep Iran and its affiliated Shiite militias away from the Israeli border. Israel wanted the Iranians and their agents to be kept almost 60 kilometers from the frontier east of the Damascus-Daraa road, but it didn't get its wish. The agreement committed to keep them only 5 kilometers from the front lines between the regime and the rebels. This means the Iranians are allowed to be within 20 kilometers of Israel's border in central Syrian Golan and within just 5 kilometers in the northern Syrian Golan, which is controlled by Assad's army. It is safe to assume that Hezbollah operatives and even members of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards sometimes come right up to the border. The Assad regime has posts overlooking the Israeli border near Qunitra in the northern Golan, and it's possible that senior Hezbollah operatives and Iranian representatives visit these posts, which are quite close to Israeli territory. That isn't the only important development in recent months. About a month ago, the regime retook the enclave of Beit Jin in the northern Golan from Sunni rebels located less than 15 kilometers from the Israeli border. Remember that Israel now has a loose alliance with the Sunni sect of Islam against the Shiite sect. This is one factor that will cause Shiite Iran to attack Israel in its effort to finally gain the supremacy over the coming caliphate. Israel Defense Forces officers and security cabinet members believe that Assad will make an effort to regain control of the rest of the Syrian Golan, in part because of the symbolic importance of sovereignty over that border with Israel. And Israel is providing arms, ammunition, medical support, food, clothing, and money to southern Syria's rebel armies in hopes of turning the war against Bashar al-Assad. All these changes have taken place at a time when America has greatly reduced its involvement in southern Syria in deference to the agreement with Russia. The Trump administration closed the CIA-run operations center in Amman, Jordan last month. This left Israel on its own to deal with upholding aid supplies to the Sunni rebels fighting the Shiites in southern Syria. Aid for those rebels was funneled by the U.S. through Amman, Jordan via a CIA operation. President Donald Trump says, on one hand, that he loves Israel and has Israel's back, but with the other, he's throwing Israel under the war bus, hoping that America's military support in the Negev will suffice to assist what Israel is facing. It won't. If I'm right, along with numerous rabbis, that the office of President of the United States will be held by Gog of Ezekiel 38, then we will see how Donald Trump's move has endangered Israel and will drag the U.S. into direct conflict with Russia and Iran. Last summer, Israel admitted that it provides civilian aid to villages in the Syrian Golan, but declined to confirm that it also provides military aid. These Israeli moves are intended to help block the Assad regime's advance in the Golan and its conquest of rebel-held villages near the Israeli border. Nevertheless, there's an expectations gap between the two sides. The rebels expect unlimited Israeli support, and some are even hoping for help in their efforts to topple the regime. Israel's plans are much more modest and are intended as a holding action. These moderate Sunni rebels, whom the Israeli defense establishment terms the locals, control most of the Israeli or Syrian-Israeli border, aside from two areas: a Syrian regime-controlled area in the northern Golan and a section of the southern Golan, which is controlled by a branch of the Islamic State. And Israel is also helping the rebels in their war against the Islamic State. Like Israel, Iran has trained, continues to train, and continues to finance powerful militias groups comprised of thousands of Iranian-trained guerrillas on Syrian soil. Both parties are preparing for the inevitable King of the North war. And, by the way, Israel surely is upholding its end of the alliance with Saudi Arabia and the Sunnis by taking this coming war on the chin. The Saudis will find, however, that they can't hide behind Israel's shirt tails and that Israel's firepower will not be enough to stop the Shiite army. Shiite Iran is equipping its militants with advanced technologies, including drones, used both to collect intelligence and possibly to carry out aerial attacks. According to Amir Toumaj, a researcher at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, the ultimate goal is for Syria to be the new front between Israel and Hezbollah and Iran. Iran is also continuing to create alliances with like-minded local forces that are interested in enjoying the training and financing that Iran provides and to create an anti-Israel coalition. I will quote this Yahoo article directly, which will show you that it is not only me who sees the direct danger to Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the United States. Quote, Iran has multiplied its strength within the Arab world while decreasing the threats its forces face. The method is also a major problem for Israel, the United States, and Saudi Arabia, which are well aware of Iran's influence in the region but remain unsure of how to defuse it. Unquote. That is all on the Iranian issue for now. I'm sure it will come up again. Now let's take a look at Syria. Under Iran's watchful eye and possibly under Iranian Revolutionary Guard orders, President Bashar Assad is blatantly bombing the suburbs of Damascus and the town of Ghouta. What's worse, the Russians have been helping in the bombing of Ghouta. Airstrikes and shelling rebel-held Ghouta suburbs outside Damascus killed at least 10 people this week and wounded dozens more on Wednesday, adding to the already staggering casualty toll that has overwhelmed medical personnel in the past few days. What's worse is that the Russians are participating in this massacre. Syrian government forces and Russian aircraft bombed eastern Ghouta all week and have shown no signs of letting up on their assault. At least 260 people have been killed since Sunday night, according to the Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights Monitoring Group, including 10 in a wave of strikes on the town of Kfir Batna on Wednesday. Ghouta has been targeted with airstrikes, artillery fire, and barrel bombs. These are explosives-filled oil drums dropped from helicopters at high altitudes. Ghouta is only 10 miles from the hospitals in Damascus, but women and children and the elderly cannot be evacuated because of the ongoing barrage. And many are hiding in basements and not being able to go out for food or supplies. The Russian military is involved in what appears to be a large push to clear the area of Syrian rebels who have been trying to oust President Bashar al-Assad since 2010. President Donald Trump has pulled all support for these groups that got involved in this effort to remove Assad from office under Obama, whose agenda was to conquer and hold the Syrian area for its fossil fuel distribution hubs. One president starts a war, another makes it worse. 400,000 people have been killed in Syria's civil war, and it does not appear to be completely over yet. In fact, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov bragged earlier this week that Eastern Aleppo will serve as a model for Eastern Ghouta, meaning they intend to destroy the city. Just how bad is the situation in Eastern Ghouta? Everything has been targeted. Shops, markets, hospitals, schools, mosques, everything. The Syrian government is not allowing humanitarian aid to get in despite the demand from the Red Cross that it do so. And while the bombing is going on in Ghouta, residents of Damascus worry that stray mortars will hit them. Keep in mind that Ghouta is one of the de-escalation zones agreed to last summer between Russia's President Vladimir Putin and U.S. President Donald Trump. Stay tuned, I'll be right back after these messages. Hi, this is Kimberly Rogers Brown, thanking you for listening to the Jerusalem Report, produced by BeastWatchNews.com, and asking you to send your support, a donation of any size, to BeastWatchNews.com. It costs money to run ministries, to teach the Word, interpret the prophecies, and to keep websites online. Trust me, we sure do appreciate it. And remember, you can read the transcript of today's broadcast under the Jerusalem Report at BeastWatchNews.com. Join me in Jerusalem for Passover 2018. I've put together an affordable tour of Israel and Jordan with three options. You can join us for 2 days, 7 days, or 13 days, whatever fits your pocketbook. Go to BeastWatchNews.com for details, pricing, and to see the money you can save by coming on this tour. Let's all say, this year in Jerusalem! So now let's go over these de-escalation zones. Zone 1, Idlib province, where bombing is still happening, but it includes northeastern areas of Latakia province as well, western areas of Aleppo province, and northern areas of Hama province. There are more than 1 million civilians in this zone, and its rebel factions are dominated by an al-Qaeda-linked alliance. Zone 2 is Rastan and Talbisay enclave in northern Homs province. There are approximately 180,000 civilians in this zone, and its network of rebel groups includes al-Qaeda-linked fighters. Zone 3, Eastern Ghouta, which is being bombed in the northern Damascus countryside. It's controlled by Jaish al-Islam, a powerful rebel faction that has been participating in the Astana talks, and it is home to about 690,000 civilians. This zone does not include the adjacent government-besieged area of Kabun. And Zone 4, and this is important, the rebel-controlled south along the border with Israel and Jordan, that includes parts of Daraa and Quneitra provinces, and up to 800,000 civilians live there. President Trump was largely silent this week about President Putin's betrayal of the agreed-upon de-escalation zones. We can only imagine what went through his head when Putin told him to keep U.S. forces out of the area this week and not to attempt helping the Syrian Democratic Forces. I said last year that Trump would get some surprises from Putin. This is certainly one of them. I suspect Trump now sees that Putin can't be trusted and that their deal was a waste of time since he moved ahead with testing the Arrow 3 missile system this week in Israel. Trump now knows the de-escalation zone 4 is in danger, like I said it would be. Monday's test of the Arrow 3 interceptor happened only 8 days after Iran displayed what it called a new version of the Ghadir missile, which has a 2,000-kilometer range that puts Israeli territory within its reach. The Ghadir is part of a missile program that Tehran has vowed to continue, despite calls by Israel and the U.S. for a halt to such activity as part of their push for a new deal to curb Iran's nuclear development. Last weekend, there was another complication in the Syria mess. The United States openly declared it has embedded its troops among Syrian rebels as advisors, which was a U.S. betrayal of the agreement between Putin and Trump. Russia is not wanting to appear to have boots on the ground. It sent in large units of mercenaries, which were mostly killed on February 7th. Some unsubstantiated Russian social media sources are claiming there was a massacre of 2 Russian mercenary fighting units. One unit was reportedly wiped out and the other cut to pieces by U.S. firepower, killing up to 200 Russian nationals. Other sources say only a handful of contracted Russian advisors were caught up in the onslaught. Either way, the U.S. has now engaged Russia directly, without a proxy. Russian news service Pravda reports anonymous sources as saying they simply rolled us, artillery first, then helicopters. As a result, almost everyone from the 5th Assault Detachment died. They were burnt together with their hardware. Moscow's official line is that none of its personnel was attacked by U.S. forces. But now, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has issued a stark warning to the United States, don't play with fire. The U.S. attack on Russian mercenary stand-ins for actual Russian troops marks the first time that the United States and Russia have been in direct battle. Isn't it interesting that on the same weekend that Iran tested Israel by sending an unmanned drone over its border, in what was the first time Iran and Israel had faced off, that the United States and Russia also faced off? The arrangements made by President Trump with President Putin seemingly are falling apart. First, Trump wanted the safe zone at Israel's Golan border to be wider, 60 kilometers, but he didn't get that in his negotiations. He instead negotiated the 4 safe zones, only to now discover that Russia likely had no intention of keeping its side of that deal. Washington and its partners may safely conclude, with respect to Russian benign intentions in Syria, that there are none. Skeptics would warn that Russia is merely buying time to help its loathsome client regain rule over the entire country. Skeptics would enumerate the minimal conditions necessary for free and fair elections and ask which decade Moscow has in mind for polling places to open in Syria. It's a scenario that has threatened to unfold for some time. U.S. and Russian forces have been facing each other from opposite sides of the civil war in Syria almost since it began in 2011. But even before the Syrian war, the U.S. and Russia have been facing off, beginning with right after World War II with the conflict between North and South Korea, then Vietnam, where the Russians were a military supplier to the Vietnamese, then Afghanistan, Ukraine, Yemen, and now Syria. Can you see that the United States and Russia have been at war constantly since World War II? Vladimir Putin saved face over the destruction of his mercenary troops by simply designating his advisors as mercenaries or contractors and providing an out from this escalation into becoming a full-blown diplomatic crisis. The main reason Putin would want to avoid a full-scale war with the U.S. right now probably has to do with Russia and Iran's military readiness issue. As I have said in the past, they will strike when they are absolutely certain of a positive outcome. In the meantime, Putin's untrustworthiness over de-escalation Zone 4 proved correct. Russia has called on Jordan to help stabilize the situation along the Quneitra and Daraa provinces that make up Jordan's border. The ongoing offensive of the Syrian government and Iran in eastern Ghouta, in clear violation of the agreements, may also bode ill for the de-escalation zone in the south, as both the Southern Front and Israel now see another land grab as Damascus' next possible step. It is to Russia's advantage to have one of the most politically stabilizing Sunni nations in coalition with the 4+1 Shiite coalition. For appearance's sake, a Sunni nation in alliance with the 4+1 will cloud the real issue behind Russia and Iran's aggression, which is the 1400-year-old war between the two Islamic factions. Zone 4 is already on the brink of collapse. It was this sense of urgency to prevent the derailing of an agreement co-sponsored by Russia and the United States, a crucial element in Moscow's plan to settle the conflict, that brought Abdullah and Putin together this week to prevent another spiral of violence in the south. Russia hopes Jordan will project its influence on the southern front to act as a buffer between Israel and the Iranian-backed forces, while Moscow seeks a workable path to their coexistence in Syria. In this context, and from Russia's viewpoint, Jordan becomes a tested partner that is accepted by Iran and Israel, and could also bring with it a more positive view to U.S. and Arab powers of Russia's role in Syria. From the U.S., Israel, and Saudi perspective, it could appear that Jordan is moving away from its solid Sunni alliance. To this end, and despite Trump's rhetoric on punishing countries that don't agree with U.S. policy in the Middle East and Jerusalem, his administration announced last week that it would boost aid to Jordan by more than $1 billion over the next 5 years. Rex Tillerson called the package a signal to the rest of the world that the U.S.-Jordan partnership has never been stronger. Jordan sees it as a welcome reprieve. The rest of us should see it as a hefty bribe to keep Jordan squarely in the U.S.-Israel-Saudi King of the South alliance. The truth is that Jordan will be attacked by their Persian neighbor to the north, according to Daniel 11. President Trump's reaction to this escalation between Iran and Israel and the U.S. and Russia will be pivotal. It doesn't help that this week the Israelis and the U.S. say they have successfully tested an anti-missile system that would protect Israel from a potential long-range missile attack by its regional rival Iran. God said that Gog will prepare and become a guard to Israel. That is what is happening, step by step. As Putin and Trump throw each other under the war bus, the time when the King of the North will confront Gog in Israel is approaching. Israel and the U.S. oppose Iran's development of long-range ballistic missiles, and rightfully so, because they say Tehran could mount nuclear warheads on them, threatening Israeli and U.S. targets or their allies. Of course, Iran says its nuclear program is peaceful and its missiles are defensive. But those assurances have found few believers in Israel's security establishment, which has been debating how far the Israeli government should now go to protect their nation from Iranian missiles. Israel has been developing multiple layers of defenses against long, medium, and short-range rockets for decades. The Arrow 2 was the first operational system that debuted in 2000. Its function is to intercept long-range missiles as they move within the Earth's atmosphere. But in recent months, Israel has focused on enhancing the Arrow 3 system, which is designed to destroy long-range missiles as they travel outside of the atmosphere. After two aborted tests in December and January, U.S. and Israeli missile defense officials said the Arrow 3 interceptor launched on Monday from central Israel, which was most likely from the U.S. Negev military base, reached its simulated target. They said it would have struck the target had it been a real missile. To further anger Iran and Russia, the Israeli government called last week for an indefinite ban on Iranian development of long-range missiles as part of a diplomatic campaign with the U.S. to toughen the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. France said Iran's missile program should be put under international surveillance to ensure that it does not endanger regional security. Britain and Germany also said they are willing to address concerns about Iranian missiles, but Iran said those missiles are non-negotiable. Both sides, the U.S. and Russia, are playing a game of roulette with a gun big enough to hold nuclear missiles. Not only is it roulette that is being played, Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are playing a game of who can lie the best and get away with it. Both see themselves as deal makers, big dogs, and neither of them is willing to lose face or lose the game. Thus, neither side can be trusted. Trump does not have Israel's best interest at heart, and he is pulling a mission creep in Syria, just like Russia and Iran, that is endangering Israel. And that's a crime against Yahweh that the U.S. will pay for. Under Trump's watch, Gog is now back in Israel as a military occupying force, fulfilling Ezekiel 38:7. Most people won't see it this way. Most see it as a friend helping a friend to guard territory. So let me read Ezekiel 38:7 again. Be prepared and prepare for yourself, you and all your company that are assembled to you, and be a guard to them. Trump has already fulfilled being a guard to Israel in a way that no previous president ever did. He may fulfill the rest of Ezekiel as well. He is after a spoil, like Gog is in Ezekiel 38. For Donald Trump, part of the spoil could be the deal of the 21st century, peace between Israel and the Palestinians. A peace deal that no one who has tried so far has pulled off. The more he meddles in Israel with the Palestinians, making Jerusalem a target of the enemy by putting a U.S. embassy there, which Yahweh will see as dividing his city, and lying to his enemies on important deals, the more trouble he makes for Israel. And the U.S. will pay for Donald Trump's insanity. Even as late as mid-January, some had hopes that Iran would lose its land corridor from Tehran to the Mediterranean Sea without a shot being fired. We now know that is not a possibility. Those same hopeful people believe that Iran's forces were weak, overexposed, and certain to fare poorly in a direct battle with the U.S., which may be why Russia has stepped in. But Russia stepping into the Syrian arena has all the earmarks of war preparation, getting the Syrian situation cleaned up before moving to the next phase, which probably is war with Israel and the United States. On Thursday, Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Araghchi said he fears there will be war with Syria's neighbors. This is code speech for there will be war with Syria's neighbors. Who are Syria's neighbors? Oh, Israel, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, you get the picture. Araqchi's statement is not a sad sentiment, but a war warning. This Middle East war that is escalating between Israel and Iran and the U.S. and Russia won't continue to be fought on Middle East soil. It will come home to roost on U.S. soil. That's it for this Beast Watch News update. This is Kimberly Rogers Brown signing off. Click over to BeastWatchNews.com for full comprehensive coverage of all the headlines fulfilling end of days Bible prophecy.